5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Let's talk about the Trump trade war, the tariffs, and why they are good, and in which situation are tariffs on imports and exports, especially imports, great? And we're gonna talk with Mark. Mark is from the Oil and Gas Podcast Network, and we're gonna talk oil and gas and the physical labor shortage in the United States. So check it out, hofprofit.com/podcast. Don't forget to share, like, and retweet. I just had a sip of coffee, so good morning, my friends. How are you doing? I hope you are doing fine, and I hope you are doing great. Basically, yes, that's all I hope that you are doing. We're gonna have an interesting show, because we're gonna talk about trade tariffs. I mean, there's now a trade war going on. Trump is imposing tariffs, and he is imposing the tariffs basically because the United States cannot compete with other countries. So he is basically enforcing tariffs, and he is pushing the tariffs to anyone who is making unfair deals. Interestingly enough, he said to Theresa May, well, we want to have a fair trade deal and then we can make a deal. This is not really what the UK expected, but it could be something that the UK needs. Just a great trade deal. Just imagine the UK and the US signing a trade deal, the UK joining Kanzuk. Then basically the UK would be in a great position to deal with Australia, New Zealand, Canada, United Kingdom and the United States. It would be great for all countries and everyone engaged, so that would be extremely great for them. But we have to see where it goes. One of the great reasons where you could have trade tariffs is when you would simply abolish most of the government revenue sources and you say, well, our industry is dead broken, we need to protect it at some forms, and we need some revenue to do the few things the government does. So if you would do that, then I would say, yeah, trade tariffs are an opportunity for you to go for, and they are an opportunity to go for just because of the fact that if you would pay let's say that you would do the smart thing and you say we're gonna impose for all the government levels, we're gonna impose 12% VAT on everything. So every side of government, state, country and federal government gets 4% on the VAT. This means that prices go down. This is great. I mean, prices go down, you can your money gets you further. That's great. And at the same time, the people who spend more, so the people who have more money, they pay more in tax. So for the feminist terrorists who are blaming everything to everyone, this is a great thing. They should really like this idea because it's bringing them forward. And you could get all those bureaucrats who were working on this program, you could simply fire them, which would mean shrinking the government size. It's also a great thing to do. Well, having that said, then another side that we don't look at is that a lot of people are not really skilled for things. You see here in the Netherlands, the Dutch army is holding a big recruitment campaign and they say, well, no matter what you are going to do, you're skilled for life. So really interesting, and I do think that there are a lot of things that you can learn, and actually I am really supportive of drafting everyone up. And the reason that I say that we should draft everyone is basically that if I look at the Netherlands, a lot of people don't know how to code. A lot of people don't know how to cook. There are a lot of problems reading, writing. So I would simply say, after your high school, when you have to say what you're going to do, otherwise you're to your eyeballs in debt, 2 years to 2.5 years military service, 4 hours of exercise a day. We're going to learn your code. We're going to learn your Dutch, English, Mandarin, French, German. And we're going to all the small issues that we've got in society, we're going to fix it. And then not that we say, well, you're going to have to run with the machine gun and we're going to fight everywhere. No, really not. I would simply say, hey, have fun. It's your war. We don't engage. We want peace. We will trade with everyone. We just want to trade and make money together. And that's all we're going to do. But it would be a great method to create generations and generations to come who can really move the country forward. So, and if you look at the unemployment figures and the fact that all those people are talking that unemployment is going down, you should also look, and that's something that people ignore to do, how many people are still looking for a job. This figure is also going down. So the only reason that the economy is that's going down is that there are less people looking for a job. Now there are some, yesterday when I talked to Mark, he gave me a great example of an area where it's booming. And that was that what he said, for example, McDonald's, which are just entry jobs. If you're a student, you need some money on the side. This is where you go to. If you get out of jail, you need to have a job. So you go to the McDonald's. I mean, literally, there is a secret, there is a junkie and a dealer in every fast food restaurant working. So, and McDonald's in certain areas of the United States closed down the restaurants. The reason? Companies walked in, so they go to people that they know have pretty high chance of a criminal background or a background as just a student dropout, someone who's from school, just making money on the side. From, hey, I'm from this company and I need some staff. You want to work for me? I pay you $50 an hour. Hey, $50 an hour. That's a great entry job, and that's really pushing the economy forward. That's really what you need to drive and succeed. Not that, sorry to use the word bullshit, that people say, for, well, we want this, and we need government programs. No, you just need a private company who's using common sense, who just says, I need to make money, and for that to make money, I need to have this, so I can pay him this, and I will be more than happy to do it. And a side effect, just imagine, McDonald's is closing down restaurants. There's only a drive line, so that's really amazing, in my opinion. All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax. Completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones. So you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. HoffProfit.com/passport. I say HoffProfit.com/passport. The European Union imposed completely global covering privacy laws, so it's the highest time for you to be transparent, unless you want to pay a 20 million euro fine. And yes, the European Commission is on a witch hunt, so get ready. So check out GDPR compliance course on hofprofit.com/GDPR. That's hofprofit.com/GDPR. We are living in a tremendous time. Never it has become so easy to become the next millionaire. If it's become the next self-made millionaire by selling your home, or your business, or by constantly and ongoingly moving towards the great, glorious millionaireship. You can do it also. It just commits hard work, training, commitment, and honesty. Visit hofprofit.com/millionaire for the millionaire report and join the queue on the highway to success. WordPress offers you many great opportunities to build a great website, webshop, and spread your message. If it's your blog, your desire to become financially independent, WordPress is there for you to help you. WordPress has many hidden features no one knows. So visit hofprofit.com/WordPress for the WordPress training menu. Social media is here. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Weibo, blogging, LinkedIn, Swan, Google+. But how to use them in your advantage? Get yourself the Social Media Expert course. It's the smart point to use all social media in your advantage without burning all your time. HoffProfit.com/SMM. I say HoffProfit.com/SMM. The Brexit is here. Article 50 is triggered. The talks are going on. Unprecedented change will happen. We know this, we know things for certain. The Brexit is a profit maker, at least if you are open for making some money. Get yourself the profitable Brexit report. It explains how the Brexit could happen, the economic fundamentals. Finally, also a few great methods to make some money on the Brexit. So, are you a profit maker? Are you someone that's open-minded when it comes to making profits? Check hofprofit.com/Brexit. The stock markets are heading towards record highs. At the same time, the government spending is at all-time high with tax revenue going to all-time low. This means only one thing can happen. The complete system is gonna collapse. Stock markets and shares, bonds, mutual funds, it's all gonna go down the drain. So get ready, prepare yourself for the upcoming collapse and check the Survive the Collapse report, hofprofit.com/collapse. If you then have a quick look at the trade war and the tariffs, there's something that I do think that the Trump administration recognized, and which is great that they recognize this, and that's a matter of the fact that they are not putting any tariffs on shoes. What the United States government is not imposing tariffs upon is shoes, and we all know women love shoes. When does a woman have enough shoes? When the wardrobe is full, and then they first need a new wardrobe. So that's a bit how they think about it, and that's just different than how I look at shoes. I just need some pair to walk and without breaking anything of my body. But okay, that's fine. That's why we are different. So let's respect and celebrate the differences and just do it. But a lot of shoes are sold by women, and we already have a gender pay gap. There's already a situation that women make less money than men, and let's face the fact, if you want to buy, where in the United States are they making shoes? And you could say that it's because Trump's daughter is into the fashion business. I doubt it is. It's just because he uses common sense. He knows that there is no way they can compete, and that if they would impose tariffs, the fashion companies would reduce the size of the shops, they would lay off workers, and that are all things that people are doing that you don't want as a government. And yes, I know that it sounds crazy. I mean, even the Make America Great Again caps are made in China. But then, without further delay, it's time to have a chat with Mark LeCour. Mark hosts, is a co-host of a podcast, and he is about the oil and gas network. He is from Houston, Texas, and must admit, love what he is doing. I'm a subscriber of his podcast, and I sincerely hope you are going to be a subscriber also, just because it's a great thing. It gives you a lot of insights of the oil and gas industry. And no matter what you think about it, the oil and gas industry is one of the few industries who can really push the world forward. So without further delay, let's look at today's exclusive interview.
Thank you. I'm very proud to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I'm totally honored. You just told me you have one of the most listened oil and gas podcasts. How is that possible? Yep.
The truth is, a lot of it was luck. So we started the first oil and gas podcast about 4 years ago. I didn't think it would ever turn into anything. And you fast forward now to 2018, and we have three podcasts. They're all the top podcasts in oil and gas. We have several more in the works. And a lot of it is just that we got into the market before anybody else did. And this new younger workforce loves podcasts. They love to not waste time when they're commuting or when they're on the train or when they're working out, they're doing dishes, and they want to learn and they listen to podcasts. And we just happen to get there first.
Yeah, I mean, podcasts are an extremely powerful message because I'm not sure about you, but I am at the moment listening to sitting up in a headset. So all I hear is you. And the same with those commuting in train or car or wherever.
Yeah, and it's the technology limitations has been removed. So it's gotten much easier in the last 3 or 4 years to do a podcast. And then for us, we actually have a global company. So I have people in Bosnia. I have people in India. I have people that work for us all over the world. And that's not possible without technology. So the technology has gotten to the point where we can run a business, a global business, without physically having to be near each other.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, my company is incorporated in Hong Kong. I'm at the moment in Eindhoven. I'm planning to move to Vanuatu and making most of my money out of projects in the United States and Eindhoven and London. It's great.
It really is great. And not only is it great that you and I and others get to work without geographic constraints, but look at my people that are in India or my people that are in Bosnia. They're making good money working with us, and they don't have to be here in the States. I think that's wonderful.
It's great. I mean, literally, I need a new logo for my podcast. Someone in Uzbekistan is making it for $5.
Yeah. So I don't want to give away how much we're paying to have these things edited, but I have a professional audio engineer in Bosnia doing this for very little U.S. dollars. But in Bosnia, it's big money. And so he's thankful to have the business, and I'm thankful for his work. So it's kind of it works well for both of us.
I mean, it's a great thing, the innovation and basically how the internet has changed the world.
It really has.
That's basically what it is. All you need is unlimited access to the internet and start making money, start doing projects or start hiring.
Yeah, and not only making money and running a business, but think about the education component. So 10 years ago, if I was in rural China somewhere, if I was in Beijing, I didn't really know what's going on in the rest of the world. Now I do. And that's removing borders. That's, you know, I know that you see a lot of stuff on the news about how different parts of the world don't get along with other parts of the world. But what I'm seeing is the opposite. In real life, I'm seeing countries that we normally wouldn't have associated with see what's really going on and be appreciative of that sort of stuff. So I think the technology component is affecting us business, but it's also affecting us from a cultural point of view. And I think it's a wonderful thing.
It's a bit like what they always say with Apple, with that commercial from Think Different. From the crazy ones are those who push the human race forward. Now everyone can do it. It's just start. Take a small baby step and give it some time. Start slow steps and go on.
Yeah, I agree. Look at you and I. We've never met. You're across the Atlantic Ocean from me right now. It's it's in the evening in your time, and it's in the morning in my time. Reached out to me. Yeah, you reached out to me online. This conversation that we're recording for your podcast couldn't have existed without technology. And we've removed that border, so we're not worried about the Atlantic Ocean right now. It's you and I just talking to your audience.
Now, a great thing that someone I interviewed a few times for my show said, he was a journalist for a commercial news station in the Netherlands. The station went bankrupt. Well, if you start a radio station and you put 50 lease cars on your balance sheet and you have two sales guys who are basically sitting at the office, you're doing something wrong. And he was going to interview Daisy Bouters. Suriname is a former colony, so he was going to chat there. For the interview, he had to fly in. Just imagine this.
Yeah,
that's expensive.
Yeah, and it's crazy in today's world to do that. On one of our podcasts, we do a lot of remote interviews, and what we do is we send out a inexpensive but nice USB headset with a microphone so that we get a good microphone, and all we do is fire up Skype just like you're doing, and we can interview anybody anywhere in the world.
It's great. I mean, it's just loving. I mean, you're in Dallas, I believe?
Houston.
Oh, Houston. I'm sorry, Houston. And I'm in Eindhoven. It's great. So let's go to Houston. It's the oil and NATO capital of the world.
Yes.
And your podcast is about oil and gas.
Yeah, so we have three of them. So Houston is the global epicenter of the oil and gas industry. So it's not just the U.S. Center. Every nationalized oil company in the world, Petrobras, MEC, Statoil, all have offices and locations here. Mm-hmm. And it's a great place to be. It's sort of like if you were in the financial business, you would want to be in New York City in the U.S. because that's the center of the world finance. So Houston's a great place, a lot of business here. We started the podcast about 4 years ago, and it's grown. We're up to 370,000 listeners in 172 different countries.
My caramba, that's a lot. That's really a lot. It's amazing.
It really is, and it causes things to happen that I'm starting to accept as normal. That's not. So all of these oil and gas conferences and expos invite us as press because they know that if we bring the podcast to their event, 300 extra people will show up to see the podcast. Yeah. And so now we're going to all these events, and I have people I have never met run up to me and hug me. Because they feel like they know me, because when you have a podcast, it's an intimate relationship, right? Your audience listens to you every week, and they feel like they know you. Once again, how beautiful is that? Is that we have this large family of listeners who have an intimate relationship with us and the other podcast hosts. I think it's just a wonderful thing. It makes the world a better place.
It's a great thing. I mean, it is something that I will do in my podcast and that I simply borrowed from you. You're holding monthly wake-ups, and I'm now working on how to get it on. How did you get the idea of starting monthly wake up?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you I was smart. My core team brought that to me about 4 months ago, and I thought it was a bad idea. I really did. I said, this is a bad idea, and I was wrong. It's this new younger workforce likes to network, but they like to do it in a different way than my generation. And so we started these monthly meetups, and it's grown like crazy. In fact, I just got this email about 30 minutes ago. We have one of the local beer breweries reached out to me, and they want to sponsor this. How I didn't ask them to do this. How wonderful is that?
Well, if they have some time over, I'll be more than happy to grab them.
Yeah, it's. I've spent a lot of time in the Netherlands and in Norway. The beer over there is expensive. It's good, but it's expensive. You come over here to the States, and the beer is not as good, but it's much cheaper.
I love cheap.
You love cheap.
I always say I'm Dutch, but I also have an Israeli citizenship, so this tells you enough. I love cheap. Definitely. Now, let's have a look at the oil and gas sector, because the oil price is coming from a really low, and there are quite some problems within the OPEC, but at the same time, the United States is killing the OPEC.
Yeah, so it's a real interesting dichotomy that unless you're in the industry, you don't know. So when people think about oil, especially that North Sea area that you're talking about, that you're from, all they worry about is upstream. So a lot of people think that low crude prices is a bad thing. It is if you're an operator, right?
Yeah.
It's a bad thing, right? You don't make money. You have to lay people off, all that sort of stuff. But if you think about it, you know, has the prices for the tires of your car or has the prices for your nylon shirts, has that gone down? And the answer, of course, is no. Well, what most people don't know is all that is made from crude oil and natural gas. Mm-hmm. So there's a part of the oil and gas industry called downstream that turns crude and natural gas into products like your cell phone or paint for your car or the composite blades on a windmill. All that comes from oil and gas. Well, since their raw feedstock has been cut this last couple of years by 40 to 60%, they're making money left and right. So part of the industry is hurting by these low crude prices, but part of this industry is making money like crazy, and that's petrochemicals. So the industry always does well if you understand the complete industry. Now, the prices of crude are starting to creep back up. And you mentioned OPEC. The U.S. and Russia and OPEC are in an interesting situation right now. Whoever controls the price of crude carries a lot of political weight. And the price of, instead of thinking of crude or natural gas, think of it as energy. You know, you can't bring a population out of poverty without cheap, reliable, abundant energy. And a lot of the world still needs that. China, Vietnam, India, they're all trying to pull their population out of poverty and they need cheap, abundant energy. So, the demand is starting to go back up, and OPEC, in working with Russia, is trying to limit supply so they keep the price high. The U.S. doesn't work that way. The U.S., the government doesn't own the oil and gas companies. It's independent people like you and me. So if you and me owned an oil company in the U.S. and we were getting oil out of the ground and prices got low, what would you and I do? We would, make more oil, right, to make more money, which is the opposite strategy of OPEC and Russia. So that's why you see these two groups. You see the U.S. producers and you see OPEC and Russia not getting along. It's because the basic business fundamentals are different.
It's basically the business model of a government versus a private company, where the private company definitely is showing more innovative power.
Yep, exactly. And if your listeners have heard about the shale revolution and things like fracking, that was not invented by some large oil and gas company. That was invented by a couple of petroleum engineers working on this problem for 20 years. And they tried this solution and this solution, this solution. And hydraulic fracking actually is not new. The fracking part is old. Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, invented that in the late 50s, the early 60s. But what happened is this new generation combined it with a new technology called horizontal drilling, and bingo, now you have the ability to unlock these hydrocarbons. So it was an independent small company that came up with this solution, not a big oil and gas company. And I've seen that a thousand times. It's these small companies, you know, almost think of them like as entrepreneurs in oil and gas that make the innovations.
Oh, no, definitely. And I think that what we all agree upon is that the big companies like Shell or Statoil, who just renamed themselves just out of PR issues, and Gazprom, Rosneft, they are not the innovative powers. There are some, for example, some students inventing something crazy when they were drunk and it worked.
Yeah.
They are just buying the company of licensing the technology.
Yeah, and there's also a cultural part of that if a lot of people don't understand either. So in oil and gas, you know, you and I have podcasts, and if you and I make a mistake on the podcast, maybe we'll lose some listeners. And the worst that could happen is maybe we lose a sponsor, right? That's the absolute worst thing that can happen with us running a podcast. When you work in oil and gas and you make a mistake, people die. Yeah, and not only do people die, but you could have an environmental catastrophe which can destroy a company overnight. Yeah. So in oil and gas, when you have a process in place, and whether that's how you do accounts payable or how you cement a well or how you do public relations or marketing, and nothing leaks and nothing blows up, you don't want to change that process. So this industry inherently is old-fashioned because they don't want change. Change is such a threat in this industry. So it's a unique culture that you don't see in the tech industry or legal or retail. It's only in oil and gas.
I think of an aviation. I did last year some freelance work for our airliners. And that being said, the stewardess is putting the drinks on and giving them to you, if you're lucky enough. The thing is it's the same since they started offering it. And they all know we should change it because it's more efficient. But if you change one airliner, they have to change it all together in the world at once.
Yeah, the airline industry and maybe things like space exploration also and have that same culture. But most other industries don't. But you're right, the airline industry actually the airline industry has it better than we do. They're probably 10 years ahead as far as things like quality control, predictive maintenance. You know, that's all stuff that they figured out that helps make sure that you're safe when you fly. And the oil and gas industry isn't quite there yet. We're working on it, but we're not quite there yet.
I mean, what was interesting, because a lot of people talk about the unemployment in the United States, which I also do, because there is really some big problem, I think. And you mentioned it last week in your podcast, which was shocking for me, that you said, well, if you're a truck driver, which as a party signed, I'm party signed, so I will never be a truck driver, you will make $100,000 a year.
Oh, easily. So
just driving
so this
a truck. And I'm just thinking, damn, I read Braille. I need to drive a truck. Get my eyes better, and I'm off.
So it's not just the truck drivers. So those Shell plays, we're talking about, you and I are talking about the Permian, because that's what I was talking about on the podcast that you listen to. That's in the middle of the U.S. and Texas and New Mexico area. Mm-hmm. They can't hire enough people. And it's so bad that the local McDonald's shuts down their dining room. So if you go to McDonald's, you can't walk in and eat. The only way you can get McDonald's food is go through the drive-through. And the reason they're doing that is oil field companies will walk into the dining room at McDonald's and hire people for $50 an hour right there. And so McDonald's can't run its restaurant. So they have to shut down the drive-through. Hotel rooms, which normally would be 100 or 150 US in Midland, Texas, are going for $400 or $500. Same crappy room. It's terrible. It's booming there right now, and it's going to continue to boom. That's one of the things that you don't hear about in the news is, and once again, this goes back to the small independent operators. You know, those are the ones that are hiring right now in the Permian and the Bakken and all the Shell plays. The big guys, it could take a while before they turn that machine back around and start hiring again. But the smaller companies are hiring like crazy right now.
Likely when the small ones stop hiring, the big ones start.
Right.
It's a big opportunity. A lot of people can't find a job there.
Yeah, it's not just things like truck drivers. It's all of skilled labor. So there's not enough welders or pipe fitters or carpenters or machinists to go around. There's not enough roughnecks. There's not enough people to actually work on the rig itself. And so there's a big shortage, and there's no solution to it. So, which means that the prices are going up, which is why you heard me talking about truck drivers making $100,000 a year, because they have to pay that much to get somebody to drive a truck.
Sounds really sad. I can't drive a truck, or I'm partly decided. Otherwise, where can I send my resume? I don't think that's a smart move to put someone who's legally blind in the oil industry. Not smart.
No.
It's your guarantee to get something blown up. So, expensive. So, if you look at the oil and the shale energy, it really made the United States independent from basically West Africa and Venezuela oil.
Yeah, there's some nuances in there as well. But if you look at it from an overall net point of view, we are energy independent. Yes, we're still importing oil because our refineries like a certain type of oil. It's called heavy crude. And you only get that from Canada, Venezuela, the Middle East. And what we're producing in the U.S. is what's called sweet or light crude or light sweet crude. That's an easier product to refine. So the refineries in the world that are less technical than ours, like the refineries in Mexico and in Brazil and Argentina, they love our oil. So we're selling our oil and we're buying other people's oil. But if you would measure it, we're net. We're producing as much as we're consuming, which is a good thing.
So where would it put you on the map of worldwide oil producers in the figure?
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to. So I have a good friend of mine that lives in Russia, very, very patriotic, and he keeps talking about how the number one producer. I have another friend of mine that works for Abu Dhabi Oil Company. He likes to talk about OPEC's the biggest producer. It all depends on how you measure it. If you measure it per BTU, which is a measurement of energy, and you look at the total hydrocarbons that are going out, the U.S. is number one right now today. If you look at it at number of barrels or liters or gallons of actual crude oil, Russia's number one. OPEC's number two. We're number three. So it just depends how you measure it. But our production is continuing to go up. And in the next couple of years, no matter how you measure it, we're going to be number one in the world.
Sounds to me that China is knocking around the door to buy stuff up.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because what's happening here and in Europe is we use less and less oil and gas for fuel, but we use more of it to make stuff. So everything from your plastic light switch on your wall to your smartphone to the wires that's insulating the electricity circuits coming into your house, all that's made from crude oil and gas. And so we're over that hump of burning a lot of crude and natural gas or fuel. We use less and less every year, so we're in a good place. So our air emissions are going down, right? So our air is much cleaner now than it was in the 1970s. But what happens to countries that haven't went through their industrial revolution yet? So China, India, Vietnam, do we force them to adapt our clean burn technologies? That's not fair. Nobody made us do it. Nobody made Europe do it. But at the same time, they're the ones that are consuming the most hydrocarbons. And when they burn it for fuel, especially things like coal and crude, it's dirty for the air. And so it's interesting to watch. I don't know how much time you spend in the Asia Pacific area, but just a few years ago, if you went to China, if you went to Beijing, you couldn't breathe. The air pollution was that
I have a really great guest mask because it always brings me in problems at airports for that reason. They want to know why the hell are you bringing gas mask in your hand luggage? And I'm just
That's why, because you have to breathe.
I said, my ticket goes to China. What do you think? I don't want to die.
But if you notice, China's changing that. They're switching from coal to natural gas for electrical generation, which automatically reduces air emissions by 60%. So, I have high hopes for this planet. I think we're over the bell curve. So I think we're over the hump as far as air and water pollution. I think the oil and gas industry has a lot of negative public perception, but even that I think is starting to change. I think as we move forward in time, people will be more accepting of what we do. And quite honestly, the oil and gas industry is changing. This new younger workforce that's coming in doesn't do things the old ways. They want things different. They want to make a difference. They don't want to feel like they're harming the planet. And if they think they are, they're going to change that. And I think all of that is just wonderful.
It sounds amazing. I mean, to me, when people always say oil and gas companies or basically every energy company, they are just greedy. They don't give a damn about their customers because you need them. It's a bit like when you get your food. And if that's going to change, that would be really great. And then it's real change, not greenwashing or window dressing.
Right. And so we had some of that in the past where we talked about environmental issues and it was just a marketing conversation. It wasn't real business. Now it's real business. And there's things that are going on that people don't know because as an industry, we don't talk about it. The insiders know, but if you wanted to find the country or government organization or non-government organization that's spending the most money in the world fighting AIDS, fighting HIV, nobody would ever guess who it is. It's Chevron. Chevron spends more money fighting AIDS than anybody on the planet, but they don't talk about it. They don't promote that. If you're worried about malaria, guess who spends more money than anybody on the planet fighting malaria?
Well, let's go for Total. I was going for Total.
Good, very good guess. It's ExxonMobil.
Okay. Great guess.
ExxonMobil. And nobody knows that. And so as an industry, we need to start telling the truth. We need to start telling the stories of what we do. You know, you look at companies like Total, Technip, or now Technip FMC, since they bought FMC. They build schools in Africa for free, right? And yes, they need engineers that are in Africa, so they educate the population so they can have African engineers. But they don't need to build a school to do that. They're doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do for the country they're operating in.
But it sounds also like the really sustainable way to solve poverty. I mean, you need a school. You need engineers, so you build a school. Engineers need to read, to calculate, those things. They need to work with a computer. Hey, you're pushing a country out of poverty and make some money on a dime.
It's
a great mix to me.
Yeah, it is a great mix. And so as an industry, we bring prosperity wherever we go. It's just we're not good at telling that story. And so I even that is starting to change. The whole Paris Climate Accord, whether you believe CO2 is causing global warming and whether you believe man's activities in Flint, it doesn't matter. The most monumental thing about that is all the major oil and gas companies came together and said, okay, let's get this fixed. That's wonderful. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I have high hopes for our future. I love the fact that I'm in this industry. I'm very passionate about it, very supportive. And we're making a difference, one young person at a time.
Okay. And if you look at the oil industry, it's heavily taxed and heavily controlled by governments. I'm not sure how the situation in the U.S. is, but here they are sure that you can find nearby quite some shale energy. And the politicians just said, we need some replacements for some gas and some North Sea oil. Now we're going to import it from Russia, and we're going to say that that's going to be fine. They literally wiped out the solution. Just let's build more wind turbines on places with no wind. That's your official policy. Sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, well, the problem is you get politics involved in business, and that's never a good situation. Wind and solar have their place. They absolutely have their place. You know, as a species, when we lived in caves, we used biomass. We burned wood, right? Mm-hmm. So our energy mix has changed, and it will always change. I'll give you a perfect example. So Texas, the state I live in the U.S., is known as the oil and gas state in the United States, like the number one oil and gas state. What nobody else knows is guess who's the number one wind power generating state in the U.S.?
I know.
Yeah, Texas. Yeah.
Yeah, right. It is profitable.
Yeah, but
if you throw a wind turbine on your ground, you make money at the end of the year. You can pay the bills, you can pay the loans. It's just you make money.
That's right.
It's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, what Texas did is they helped companies stand up wind turbines, but they did it for profit. Well, now you're running your wind turbines as a business, which is how it should be, not subsidized by the government, not taxed in a different way, but where it has to compete. And at certain times of the day, when the wind is right, it is much cheaper to get electricity from wind. And now we have the technology where we can switch. So my house, when it's the right time, I'm getting wind power here, and I don't have to go do anything. When the wind dies down, we switch over to natural gas. And once again, all that's done in the background. The consumer, me, never notices the difference. But where you get in trouble is areas where you have nationalized energy companies, which is a lot of the world, and then you have nationalized policies that are written by politicians, not by businessmen or not by scientists. And we have that craziness here in the U.S. We have some of our states on the Upper East Coast don't want to build a pipeline just a few kilometers to tap into the natural gas that's in, like, Pennsylvania. But they're buying LNG, which is basically natural gas, from Russia. That's insane. In my own country, some of the states in my own country are buying natural gas from Russia because they think that's better for the environment than building a pipeline and burning their own gas.
So they seriously think that getting gas from someone that at this moment the political situation is not really great with, to say it softly, to throw that on a boat, to bring the boat over, is the smart solution.
Yeah, and what it is, okay. They're not thinking. They don't think through it. So yeah. You'll see this a lot of people. They'll want to agree on a principle, and so that principle is natural gas and crude oil is bad for the planet. And then once they agree on that principle, they feel good about themselves, not knowing that the moment they put their shoes on, shoes are made from natural gas, right? Not knowing the moment they get in the car, where does that fuel come from? So this is a perfect example of them buying gas from a country that, quite frankly, doesn't have the same environmental standards as we do here. I ask people this all the time. Have you ever heard of a Russian or a Chinese oil and gas company make a spill?
No.
No. So that means one of two things. That means they're better than the European and the Americans, or they don't report it. Which one do you think it is?
Honestly said that they don't report it, but I don't
report
my visa for Russia and China at the same time.
Well, so. No. And they know this, right? So they don't report it. And so if you're buying natural gas or crude oil, you'd much better buy it from Europe or the U.S., where if there is a mistake, if there is a spill, we report it. We have to by law. We go in and we fix it, as opposed to other countries where they don't report it and they don't fix it. So if you want to be environmentally responsible, think about where those hydrocarbons come from and buy them from the countries that make sure that we don't damage the environment.
And that's really, in my opinion, a terrible project that the European Union launched in Mali. I mean, the European Union, at least the France army and the Chinese army are in Mali because we need their uranium. That's basically the only reason why we are there. And to help the country fight poverty, we are going to build a new ID. It's a hydropower project, so a hydropower dam, in the desert with sand. Everyone who fought for more than a second said and knows the technical thing said, not going to work.
And once again, it's a perfect example of politics get involved in a place where business should be involved.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you really want to help Mali, throw all the roofs full with solar panels. It makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It makes a lot of sense.
Learn the kid's code and let's see what great innovations come from this thing.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
Yeah. It's just terrible. So if you look at the oil industry in the United States, how will it go over the next 10 to 15 years, do you think? Because when it's gone, it's gone.
Well, it's not going to go anywhere ever. Yeah. You cannot get a spacecraft in orbit with electricity. It's just not enough dense energy. That dense energy. So modern spacecraft, modern rockets, so if you look at Elon Musk, SpaceX, it runs kerosene and liquid oxygen, basically. And that kerosene comes from crude oil. A Tesla, which is a very nice car that just happens to be electric, about 70% of a Tesla is made from hydrocarbons. The plastics on the seats, the vinyls, the paints, the adhesives, the insulation, the wires, the carpet, the steering wheel, the gauges, the lights,
tires. Let's not forget where the electricity gets from.
Yeah.
That's the next question.
And so the oil and gas industry is not going anywhere. We're changing, right? With the Western world, we're moving to a world where we make products out of oil and gas and not necessarily use it for fuel, but that demand's going up. The industry in the U.S. is changing in the fact that it's become more nimble. We have these new younger workers that are coming in that think differently. They're bringing in technology faster than I've ever seen it before, ever. And so all of that is really good stuff. And I what I think is going to happen, and everybody says I'm crazy, but I think in 20 to 30 years, the U.S. oil and gas industry is going to look like Silicon Valley. It's going to look like high technology companies. It's going to be fast. It's going to be sexy. We've gotten rid of this negative perception thing. It's going to be a bunch of young people, a bunch of entrepreneurs and startups doing really cool stuff. It's going to be a very flexible work environment. We don't have enough people coming in this industry, which means that the traditional model where you go work for Total or Shell or Exxon for 30 years isn't going to work. And this new younger generation, even if you pay them well, doesn't want to work in the same place for 20 or 30 years. So you can see a lot more movement, which is going to change the employment culture. Once again, I think for the better. So I think we're headed toward a very bright, very beautiful future. I mean, we make the biggest difference on this planet than any other industry. I mean, the oil and gas industry brings prosperity everywhere. And I think we're going to continue to do that. It's just going to look different 20 years now than it does now.
I think you got me wrong, but I meant that when it's gone, it's gone. I meant the natural resources you are drilling out of the ground. At a certain moment, you can't drill anymore because you've drilled your 30% or 70% that you can drill from the source.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. That's a good thing you brought that up. So back in the 70s, a scientist that worked for Royal Dutch Shell named Hubbard came up with the theory of peak oil. And so he did that.
Good book.
He did great work, but it was based upon the technology he had available to him now. We'll take one play. We'll take the shale plays that we talk about in the U.S. Those aren't new. That's where Standard Oil was born in the 1800s. That's where the Rockefellers made their money. That's where Chevron and Exxon got their start as Standard Oil. And they would drill a hole in the ground, and the oil would come out under pressure. It would just burst out of the ground. It was called a gusher.
Wow.
And so when they quit having gushers, they said, oh, these fields are depleted. What they didn't know is they got maybe 5% of the oil out the ground, maybe. We're coming back to these same fields much later using a different technology, horizontal fracking, and we're able to get about 15% of the oil out the ground. Well, if you do the math, 15 and 5 is 20. That means 80% of the oil is still in the ground. And every year we come up with new technologies and new processes to extract those hydrocarbons. So I ask people this all the time. I said, do you ever worry about the world running out of sand to make glass? Or do you ever worry about the world running out of iron to make steel? You don't worry about that because you know that our consumption is way less than what we have. It's the same way with hydrocarbons. Mm-hmm. We're not going to run out. The sun will run out of hydrogen about the same time that the earth runs out of hydrocarbons. The other thing is hydrocarbons are still being made. That's that, mm-hmm. that process that was peaked in the Jurassic and Pleistocene era is still going on now. Our oceans are still making hydrocarbons. Not at that same level, but they're still going on. So we're not ever going to run out of crude natural gas.
Something that not so many people talk about, and that's why I love to have you on the show, to be honest.
Yeah, it's unless you're in the industry, and you also have to understand geoscience, and not just in the industry, but understand the geoscience component. A lot of people that work in this industry still worry about running out of oil. We're not going to run out ever.
That's just something that people say about it. In the Netherlands, there was a book written about peak oil, and at that moment, I was studying and did a weekly radio show, and I interviewed that guy who wrote it. Really good book. Only he couldn't answer the question from how does innovation work, because that's some new thing. And around that time, Boeing said they're going to work with electric aircrafts. Okay, they are not yet there, but they are innovating. They are doing new things. Now you can fly a jumbo jet from London to New York. Okay, you have to completely fill it up with batteries, but now just get it more efficient and you get it done.
Yeah, and electrical transportation has a huge benefit over internal combustion engines. You don't need a transmission, right? Okay. So you don't lose that energy as friction in a transmission. You have 100% of the torque at 1 RPM at the electric motor. It's a much more efficient way for medium range transportation. The problem is the battery technology. We need a breakthrough battery technology, and it's going to happen. We got a bunch of very smart people in this world working on things like solid state batteries, nanofiber technology for batteries. So once the next generation of batteries come out, you'll see a lot more electrical transportation because it just makes sense.
The interesting part about the battery technology, what you said, and I'm not sure if you know this, Tesla is using the lithium-ion batteries, and they are also being used in Airbus aircrafts. And the interesting field that if you buy a Tesla, they guarantee the battery for the rest of its life, of the life of your car, and at Airbus they say, well, after 5 years, get it out because it's unsafe, it will catch fire. Who do you trust in safety?
Yeah, so I trust Tesla.
I'll stick for Airbus.
Yeah,
better be
or
safe
Airbus.
Yeah. They make the aircrafts.
Right.
Yeah. just because it's the same technology, and Airbus says it's going to catch fire or it's going to be dangerous. And Tesla says no problem. Better be safe than sorry, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree, but there's a big difference in impact if you have a problem in the air versus you have a problem on the road.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's just that. It was just. So, what is your company doing? Because you have a podcast and you have a other business, and definitely your business is in the oil field, I assume, or gas field.
Yeah, so it's really a funny story. So I started out 25 years ago in this industry. I've always sold technology in oil and gas. Started my own company about 8 years ago or 9 years ago now, and we did market research. In the process of building that business, I got involved with social media, which once again I thought was a stupid idea, and I was wrong. It ended up driving all of our business. Even to this day, if you go to Google and type in oil and gas sales experts, you'll see me organically come up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Google thinks I'm the number one guy on the planet. And so that drove the podcast, and that drove people paying me to speak. So at the end of last year, I did a very brave thing. I was scared to death, honestly, but I shut down my market research company and stood it back up as my speaking platform. So now when people ask me what I do for a living, I have to tell them I just talk. So I either talk on the microphone like we're doing now, do podcasts, or I get paid to speak in person. And it's fun. And it's, you know, we're speaking to a lot of universities across all over the planet, and to see these young people who have this thirst, they're like a sponge. They just want to know stuff. It's wonderful, and to be able to help share some of the background and some of our experience and knowledge is a wonderful thing. And so that's what we're doing now. We do the podcast. We get paid to speak. In all of that, things are growing. So we talk about the meetups, the network events that we're doing. That's growing. That's also a revenue stream for us. We're looking at doing some conferences ourselves, like literally our own oil and gas conference. So the future's bright for us. What is it going to look like? I don't know, because it's changed so much in the last couple of years, and it will continue to change. But I know we're having fun. We're making a difference. We're making money, and we're happy. So we're in a good place.
Sounds impressive, and sounds like you and I are basically thriving on the same business model.
Yeah, and, so
I just completed the financing to do seminars here in Eindhoven, so that money is in. We can now book the speakers and throw out the money. It's really interesting to see. It's just the same model.
Yeah, and what it is this new young workforce wants to learn, but they want to learn differently. They want to learn in their time and when they want to learn. And that's where all this kind of fits in. And once again, you know, you and I talked about technology earlier. We couldn't be doing what we're doing without technology. And so, you know, it just kind of it all came together at the right time where the technology is there so you and I can have these businesses that make an impact to people all over the world.
Yeah, then we can really help people to push forward, do great things, and accomplish nice things.
Yeah,
or
make
simply share insights that are really not that heard. I mean, your opinions of viewpoints are not being heard in the Netherlands, unfortunately. So just get it out. And yeah, people who disagree with you, disagree on the facts, and let's move on.
Yeah, and so what you and I are doing are actually, we're the new media. So the conventional media is not trusted because they've done such a bad job of reporting the facts for 10 or 15, 20 years. And so people like you and me and other podcasters out there, we're telling the real stories. So we're changing the culture of the world. And once again, I think it's a great thing. Now, are there some bad podcasters out there? Yeah.
Definitely.
But so what? It's an open world. There's so much room for all of us. I get reached out to by other oil and gas podcasters, and they go, hey, look, I don't want you to feel like we're competing with you. I go, no, you're not competition. The world is huge. There's only a couple of drops in the ocean of us doing this. Let's all work together on this. So when we get approached by other podcasters, I welcome them in like family, because they are. There's so few of us doing this the right way that we're all in it together.
It's a bit like an interview I had with a guy who had a barbecue restaurant in San Diego and a podcast about digital marketing and everything on barbecue business with exception of the barbecue. And it's just, we internet guys, and I'm a big barbecue fan, so my meetup definitely is going to be something with smoke. Don't worry. It's just, we are so open-minded, and you need this? Yeah, here, I will link you. You need that contact? I will help you. You need some promotion? Sure.
Yeah, and so we help each other. But the other thing, let's go back to your barbecue. So here in the States, there's some differences of opinion on which part of the country has the best barbecue. And each part of the country, the barbecue is done differently. So it's done differently in the Carolinas area than it is in Texas and Louisiana, which is done differently than it is in Kansas, which is different than it's done on the West Coast. Here's the cool thing. You and everybody else that has an internet connection can now go get those recipes and learn how to do that immediately, like that day. Yeah. Whereas 20 years ago, you had to be taught by your father, who was taught by his grandfather, who was taught by his grandfather, and it took years to learn how to do that. I think that's a wonderful thing. If I have something break, I just YouTube it. I don't have to learn how to troubleshoot. Somebody else has already done all that work for me. Once again, it's making the world a better place because of technology.
YouTube is great. Also, Youku, the Chinese version of YouTube. It's great.
It is really great. Yeah, anything I want to do, somebody else has already done it and figured it out for me.
An interesting part for me as a party-sided person, if I read things with my eyes, it takes me a lot of time and energy. So I just turn on YouTube, start writing some reports or something I have to do to make money, and just listen to what they say, or just turn on a book, turn on a podcast. It's just great.
Yeah, I caught my 11-year-old son with his iPad. He was writing code on his iPad for Minecraft, right? He's making a mod for Minecraft. And I go, where did you learn to write code? His answer, YouTube. That's beautiful. YouTube taught my son how to write code. That's just awesome.
That takes his years in university, and then they are having problems doing this, and he just does it.
Yeah. Well, he would taken years to learn that in university, and by the time he graduated, it would have been old. It would have not been useful anymore. Whereas now, he can brush up on his coding skills instantly.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It's... Okay, where can we find your podcast? Because we have to wrap it up. We're already chatting for over 40 minutes.
Yeah,
and you need to make some money, and my belly gets hungry.
We have a couple. The easiest one to listen to is Oil and Gas This Week. That's our number one podcast. You can go to oilandgasthisweek.com or search for Oil and Gas in iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or your podcast of choice. Because we're number one, if you start typing Oil and Gas Podcast, we come up number one. We have a very niched show, Oil and Gas Health, Safety, and Environment, HS&E. So it's a very good show, very loyal audience, but it's a smaller audience. And then we have the last show, which is Oil and Gas Industry Leaders. And that's Paige Wilson interviewing the CEOs and the presidents of the big oil companies to learn their backstory. Not so much how they run their business, but how did they get there? What lessons did they learn? What's their favorite business book? So all three shows, we'd love if you if anybody has an interest, come check us out. And if you want to listen, we would love to have you on as a new listener.
Well, at least for the last one, you convinced me to join on. So sounds correctly, the health and safety part and just the operational part, I have a gut feeling it's more. I will pass. Not gonna work.
Yeah, and if you're here in the States and you're in Texas, we're doing these monthly these meetups. Welcome to it. We have an Eventbrite page. You go sign up for it. It's free. Free food, free alcohol. We usually have some people come in and talk about some really cool stuff. So yeah, feel free to come to one of our meetups. And if you do that, find me and come introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm always easy to find. I'm the guy with the cap and the blind stick. That's me. I think I'm the only one. And now I'm planning to move to do quite some things there. I mean, at the moment I'm talking to get my podcast on radio in the United States. And basically Dallas is my biggest market. Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Diego, Seattle, Las Vegas.
Yeah, well, if you make it here, let me know ahead of time. Let's get together.
I will do so. And we can just have a beer or whatever.
Oh, I got the beer covered now. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you got the sponsor. Okay, any final words for our listeners?
No, it's a pleasure to be on the show, and I hope we had a valuable conversation. If somebody wants to reach out to me direct, the easiest place to hit me up was on Twitter. It's Mark_LaCour. Other than that, thank you so much for having me on your show.
I'm honored, and I would say thank you for the interview.
Yeah.
Thanks. All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax. Completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones. So you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. HuffProfit.com/passport. I say HuffProfit.com/passport. European Union imposed completely global covering privacy laws, so it's the highest time for you to be transparent, unless you want to pay a 20 million euro fine. And yes, the European Commission is on a witch hunt, so get ready. So check out GDPR compliance course on HuffProfit.com/GDPR. That's HuffProfit.com/GDPR. We are living in a tremendous time. Never it has become so easy to become the next millionaire. If it's become the next self-made millionaire by selling your home or your business or by constantly and ongoingly moving towards the great glorious millionaireship, you can do it also. It just commits hard work, training, commitment and honesty. Visit hofprofit.com/millionaire for the millionaire report and join the queue on the highway to success. WordPress offers you many great opportunities to build a great website, webshop and spread your message. If it's your blog or your desire to become financially independent, WordPress is there for you to help you. WordPress has many hidden features no one knows. So visit hofprofit.com/WordPress for the WordPress training menu. Social media is here. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Weibo, blogging, LinkedIn, Swan, Google+. But how to use them in your advantage? Get yourself the Social Media Expert course. It's the smart point to use all social media in your advantage without burning all your time. HofProfit.com/SMM. I say HofProfit.com/SMM. The Brexit is here. Article 50 is triggered. The talks are going on. Unprecedented change will happen. We know this, we know things for certain. The Brexit is a profit maker, at least if you are open for making some money. Get yourself the Profitable Brexit Report. It explains how the Brexit could happen, the economic fundamentals. Finally, also a few great methods to make some money on the Brexit. So, are you a profit maker? Are you someone that's open-minded when it comes to making profits? Check hofprofit.com/Brexit. The stock markets are heading towards record height. At the same time, the government spending is at all-time high with tax revenue going to all-time low. This means only one thing can happen. The complete system is gonna collapse. Stock markets and shares, bonds, mutual funds, it's all gonna go down the drain. So get ready, prepare yourself for the upcoming collapse and check the Survive the Collapse report. HofProfit.com/collapse. Oh, what did you say about this interview? Is that not inspirational? If you hear it, I mean, just $100,000 a year for driving a truck. I mean, it is insane. The economy is definitely going there great. And so it's something that we need to check about, and it's something that we don't hear about. It's something that people, it's some facts that people ignore. And yes, it's not everywhere in the United States going great. There are a lot of areas where it's terrible. But with chill and the good things happen, I mean, I really consider it a sad thing that in this part of the Netherlands, they said we are not going to drill for shale energy. I mean, we're going to close down the Groningen gas fields. The North Sea is at the end of its operations. So why should we not add this to the mix and add renewable energy to the mix and nuclear? But things, just use common sense. You're not going to build a hydropower dam in the middle of the Sahara. Oh, by the way, we are doing that. That's a project from the European Union. My error. But we are doing common sense things. Throw solar panels on roof, isolate. All things that, if you do it, it makes sense. It has to be financially feasible. Get politics out of the energy and get more business in. So, with this, I call it, I will salute you. I will talk to you tomorrow and I will say cheers. Hey, it's Lodewijk. I'm really happy that you took the time to listen this moment to my podcast. I'm honored. I'm pleased with it, and I respect your choice for your life, because you made a choice. You made a choice for success. But please keep a few moments for yourself. First of all, this is a disclaimer, so it's all the legal stuff. But for any penny you invest, please take the time. Take as much time that you need to make the money to invest before you invest. And literally go sit from your desk by wherever you're gonna make the investments, wherever you're gonna do it. You're gonna stand up and look at that empty chair and just ask yourself five false questions, five terrible questions about the investment decisions you're gonna make. It's your money, so be wise with it. The information in this podcast is not intended to be true, it's not an advice. We don't sell or recommend anything. We just talk, it's general information, and please, and from the deepest of my heart, I mean, it means a lot to me that you are listening to this show, but please, just treat your money smartly. You're here because you want to get ahead of life, not you because you want to lose. So take your time. You're no profit makers are decision makers, but decision makers, and especially profitable decision makers, are informed decision makers. So let's go and let's move a step ahead. One tiny baby step at a time. We are profitable decision makers.